Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
It is almost that time. We have sat around here and poured through every portion of these matchups, used the word pressure more than is probably humanly acceptable, and now we're getting ready to finally kick the damn footballs off. It's Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, who is en route, in transit, dealing with the effects of the storms up in the Northeast like everybody else here. Stay safe. Y'all stay out of the way of that snow. I'm still debating whether or not I'm going to come back and join you guys in that cold hellhole here. It is pretty nice and warm out here in Arizona, and the trip just may get extended. So we'll hear from Chris Canty coming up in about 20 minutes when he gets ready to rock with us here. And I remind you guys, this is always the fun weekend for me sitting around here, because as I've told you guys here, was fortunate to get to play a bunch of fun games in college, get to be a part of a national championship, what goes into that. But in the NFL, obviously, was around for a couple of training camps and got shown the door. Chris Canty is a Super Bowl champion. He's a guy who's lived this weekend. And this time of year, navigating the preparation that goes into this weekend, we hear all about the value of familiarity. We're going to talk about that a lot today with the Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes hosting their fourth straight AFC championship game. What that means against a Bengals team on the other side, with a Joe Burrow who's got a history of busting up the party even when he's not necessarily familiar with the turf. So how much does preparation change? What does that look like heading into this all-important weekend in the NFL? We'll get some great insight from Chris on that, what that giant Super Bowl run looked like as they head into this weekend and what made them successful. But right now it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Because one of the other things that we got talking to yesterday, and like I said, we have had so much time. This is the gift and the curse of conference championship weekend, is we all get to spend so much time pouring into the same two games. And sometimes that means we end up going over the same stuff, but sometimes it actually produces an interesting result on the other side, because we were talking about the weird chess match that's getting ready to go on in the NFC Championship game. The San Francisco 49ers and the Los Angeles Rams. We know the 49ers by now have won the last six straight in this division rivalry. That's a hard thing to do, and with two coaches this talented, you start to look for the whys in all of this. And with the Rams, we're going to get to a bunch of interesting reasons why. But I think the most interesting and the most compelling thing about this matchup is what one side is probably already learning from the other's journey in this, right? Because the whole reason we're going to heap a ton of pressure, the way Chris Canty talked about, onto Matthew Stafford, onto Sean McVay, onto this Rams team, it's not only because they've already been to a Super Bowl and lost, like Kyle Shanahan has on the other side. It's not only because they brought Matthew Stafford over here, they shipped those three first-round picks, that treasure trove, off to get him and a number of these other guys here. It's that styles make fights in all this, and for as similar as the Rams and the 49ers have been, you have one side in the 49ers, the way they have built this, through their guys in the draft, through guys like Deebo Samuel that have become as dynamic as they have here, guys like George Kittle. We talked all over that defense, the players they've been able to find in the middle rounds, making Fred Warner, turning him into one of the best linebackers in football, and certainly paid like it. You have had all those things that come from building holistically through the draft. Versus on the other side, you've had the Rams mortgage their entire future for this. Matthew Stafford, Von Miller, Odell Beckham Jr., burning. I mean, we don't know the next time the Rams have a first-round pick. All of that is to say, everything the Rams do is going to feel more dire because of that. Think about the way we talk about Kyle Shanahan heading into this season, where we look and say, man, it's been up and down outside of that Super Bowl season. A lot of injuries, a lot of difficulties for him to be consistent in the ways that we expect for a coach with that kind of offensive mind that we love up the way that we do in public. But then you look at what happened this past offseason. Once you drafted Trey Lance, that's when the clock started for real. And the Rams have never really had that. Sean McVay came in with a quarterback in Jared Goff who was handed to him, a holdover from the Jeff Fisher era. They decided not to go the route of having to draft a young guy because the rest of that team got to a place. And that's where both of these teams are so similar. The structures these coaches have created, not only offensively, but defensively, who they have entrusted these things to. Brandon Staley last year on the Rams side, that was one of the hallmarks and the big names heading into last offseason's coaching search. This year, D'Amico Ryans on the 49ers side has had a rise built on similar principles. A four-down pass rush with absolute monsters that can make life a living hell for the other team and allow you to do some interesting things on the back end of all of this. With all those similarities, again, why does it feel so much more dire for Sean McVay? Why does it feel much more dire for Matthew Stafford? It's not the narrative stuff. It's the understanding that eventually time runs out. We saw time run out for the New Orleans Saints in the way that they had constantly mortgaged their future in favor of a future Hall of Famer in what Sean Payton had there, him and Drew Brees. Eventually, time runs out, and now you're left holding the bag here. Pittsburgh tried to keep beg, borrowing, and stealing down the stretch to see what they could make work around Ben Roethlisberger, and now they're left in an uncomfortable situation where they didn't plan for the future. The Rams situation looks like it has an expiration date or is going to feel like that because it's going to be constantly borrowing off one credit card for another. Kyle Shanahan's got time and the upside in this matchup right now. Kyle Shanahan's got a rookie quarterback surrounded by a team full of players that he has constantly been able to replace. I mean, look at what they've managed to do on the defensive line. You bring Nick Bosa over here. You let DeForest Buckner go. Eric Armstead in the middle gives you more production in there. They've constantly managed to find ways. The running back room, Elijah Mitchell is a rookie. We've talked about all the track stars they've had in that backfield, the running backs that Kyle Shanahan has circulated in and out of there. The offensive line where they brought Trent Williams over but drafted guys like Mike McGlinchey before, brought Alex Mack in here who we knew from the past. It's been a perfect blend that it feels like the runway is going to be a lot longer for Kyle Shanahan and this 49ers team. That's going to be the issue because we can try and boil this down to a Jimmy Garoppolo game, right? Jimmy Garoppolo, whose postseason stats have never been much to write home about, and Keyshawn Johnson, co-host of Keyshawn J. Will and Max this morning on ESPN Radio, tried to kind of throw cold water on that, saying this is not a redemption game in any way for Jimmy G.
When you talk about Jimmy G's, is this the biggest game for him? No, it's not. Redemption would be great, but Jimmy G is already out the door. He's already out the door. Even if he wins the Super Bowl, it may make things a little harder for them to move on because the fan base, people would be like, oh, man, what did you do when he won you the Super Bowl? But clearly, he wasn't your long-term answer at the quarterback spot because you went out and traded up to get Trey Lance. You're not trading up to get Trey Lance to move on from Trey Lance. It doesn't work that way. You traded up to get Trey Lance because you felt like Trey Lance was a better quarterback than Jimmy Garoppolo. You identified Jimmy Garoppolo as a player that could ride the bus, drive it, so to speak, and at times he may give you a fender bender, but you'll fix it and you get back on the road. That's what he has become for the San Francisco 49ers.
Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. And I think he's right. The situation is obvious. You could call Jimmy G house money. Like, this is just the reality. For everyone in San Francisco who wants to say he's a winner, all those things, sure, great, wonderful. Your organization showed you exactly what they feel about Jimmy Garoppolo. Period, end of sentence. Jimmy Garoppolo has yet to throw a touchdown in these playoffs. He's only thrown two touchdowns and five interceptions in his five playoff starts. They've gotten by with house money at that position because Kyle Shanahan and this team around him have been that great. But even with what Key said there, think about the difference between them and Matthew Stafford. I know Stafford's on the younger side, but he's on the paid side already. That's the reality. He's a quarterback who's played hard in this league, and his body reflects that. On the other side, we're talking about a 49ers team. Accomplishment-wise, they have been in a similar place. Both these coaches own Super Bowl losses at this point. Both have been, for the most part, consistent and certainly deadly teams when faced by competition. One's got time and the other doesn't. And that's going to be felt nowhere more so than this weekend, where we're already hearing about SoFi, and we're already hearing the reports from Vivid Seats, that this could be a 55% San Francisco favoring crowd like it was in Week 18. All these things start to creep in the picture. And for the Rams team that we felt like got the monkey off its back last week, Matthew Stafford and company able to overcome that fourth quarter case of lemon booty, all of that gets ratcheted up again now because it's hard as human beings to ignore that feeling and understand that for the Rams, it is always going to feel like their back's against the wall. And sometimes that's great. And other times you're 0-6 against the team inside your division that's getting ready to maybe shut the door on you getting to play the Super Bowl in your home stadium. That's what we've got going on the NFC side of things. Coming up next, I think the question heading into this weekend on the AFC side is very, very simple. We'll get to that in about 30 seconds after this word from Indeed. All right, guys, running your own business requires a lot of running around. From bookkeeping to client meetings, you run it all. So by the time you need to hire, you've run out of energy. Luckily, with Indeed Instant Match, you immediately receive a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description the moment you sponsor a job. According to Talent Nest, Indeed delivers four times more hires than all the other job sites combined. Hiring can finally run smoothly with Indeed. To learn more, visit Indeed.com/credit.
You're not going to go down fighting, then you don't deserve to be here.
Mahomes throwing left, caught, touchdown, just that easy.
We have such a home field advantage. Arrowhead's going to be rocking.
Mixon, Chase, Burrow, it has a chance.
Guys fold when they know the pressure's coming. That's not Joe Burrow.
I'm tired of underdog narrative. We're a really, really good team. We're here to make noise.
Kane Angolik Jr. here on ESPN Radio. A lot of good noise puns heading into Arrowhead. I did appreciate that as we get ready to look at the AFC Championship side of things, kind of set the table. A lot of the early week discourse about this went back to some Joe Burrow quotes about how NFL stadiums aren't really all that loud. I mean, the guy played in Death Valley, for God's sakes, down at LSU, which is pound for pound one of the loudest environments of any kind I've ever been in. I was there as a spectator, and I remember sitting on the sideline and looking at one of my friends and saying, if I was an offensive lineman out on that field, I don't know how you get things communicated the right way. That was the game, one LSU versus three Alabama, where it was so loud, Tua almost got sawed in half because no one on the field could hear the whistles from the referees blowing the play dead. That's how loud an environment it was. This is always the college sensibility versus the pro sensibilities, the pro crowds wanting to feel loved, the pro fans and the people who love that game wanting to feel like they're a part of it. Like, Joe's probably right more often than not, with a notable exception. And that exception comes in Arrowhead this week as the Bengals get set to take on the Kansas City Chiefs. And the question for this game, really, and I thought our producer Devin Kane summed this up really well in our pre-show meeting, are we really giving Cincinnati a chance? And that sounds dismissive, and I know it's going to, and I know Cincinnati fans are already internalized enough lifetime of beatings to take everything as slight, and I understand that. Jordan Cornette, if you're out there, our great ACC Network host, co-host of Sports Nation and diehard Bengals fan. I love you and I love the Bengals. Like, I got blood on the ground in Cincinnati. I got family that lives out there. I got an uncle who's been a Bengals fan for years who I listened to openly weep last weekend shouting Joe effing Burrow in the background of a video my aunt sent me. It was incredible. Like, that's what we've dealt with. Joe Burrow is every bit of the fairy tale Paul Bunyan figure that we want to make him in the world of football. He's proven that at every turn. But on the other side, we've kind of got the Death Star. This was Joe Burrow, the Bengals quarterback, talking about what he's looking forward to this weekend with the Chiefs.
We're excited about the opportunity. Obviously, a really good team. If you want to do the things that we want to do, that's a team that you're going to have to beat every single year. You know, the AFC has run through them for four straight years. So, you know, we're excited about the opportunity. We're going to have a great week of practice, and we'll be ready to go.
Joe Burrow's never going to sound like he's phased in all of this one. And he's the guy that I'm going to be told, kind of like it was with Tom Brady last weekend, I felt like an idiot betting against Tom Brady in a pressure setting against Matthew Stafford and that Rams team. But eventually, something's got to fold here. And I feel like in this matchup, this brings me all the way back. And I've talked about this relative to a couple of other situations, but the Super Bowl last year is so stuck in my craw when we look at this matchup. Because I want to go back to when these teams played in December. Jamar Chase had 266 yards receiving in that game and absolutely lit up the Chiefs' secondary. Steve Spagnuolo, their defensive coordinator, for some ungodly reason decided in a defense that we know does like to send pressure, that is in Spag's DNA, to continue to isolate his defensive backs on Jamar Chase in a way that completely hung them out to dry. And we've talked about what Joe Burrow's overcome on the other side of that, because in that game, they also sacked Joe Burrow four times. And we know we got the grossest outlier we will get in football, more than likely, in the game last weekend in the divisional round where we saw the Tennessee Titans sack Joe Burrow nine times. And I thought football was broken at that point. But then I remembered, this is the Kansas City team that knows how this game goes. On the other side, when they got to the postseason last year, I thought the Chiefs would be able to overcome all of the offensive line issues they had against that Tampa rush. I thought they'd be able to do that off the greatness of a quarterback here. And that feels like the situation that, again, we're being asked to talk ourselves into. And I understand these teams met. We did this on the field. We should, in theory, know how this goes. But I can't in any world, with a just and loving God, believe that Spags is going to roll out that same game plan, that we're going to see probably something more akin to what we saw in the AFC divisional round game. That Bills and Chiefs absolute shootout, where all of a sudden the Chiefs clearly decide, hey, Stephon Diggs not going to be the one to beat us. If Gabe Davis wants to go off for 200-plus yards and four touchdowns in a game, that's how we're going to lose this one. The difference, again, is I think even as imperfect as the Bills were up front, we have seen the Bengals prove that much more inept in all of this. With Joe Burrow and how many times he has been sacked in this game, it seems almost impossible to overcome. He's been sacked 62 times heading into this weekend. No quarterback who's been sacked, I believe, over 50 in the matchups we've seen in the postseason has gone on to represent that side, that division in the Super Bowl. It just can't happen. As great as he is, and everyone's going to talk about how great Joe Burrow is, Andy Reid, the Chiefs head coach, waxing poetic about the Bengals star QB.
I think these young quarterbacks are great for this league. He's one of them, so he's a heck of a football player. You know, he does a nice job with those guys, and Zach does a nice job with them, along with their coordinator and coaches. So he's a coach's kid that knows the game and kind of gets it.
Here it is. Here's the stat I was searching for on that front. Per the Elias Sports Bureau, Cincinnati quarterback Joe Burrow is the sixth player to enter a conference championship game with 50-plus sacks, and his 62 are easily the most of those six players. The previous five quarterbacks have all failed to reach the Super Bowl, and four of them saw their teams fail to score an offensive touchdown in that conference title game. I am not going to say that the Bengals are going to fail to score a touchdown. If any team, because this, the one difference I will say is Joe has dealt with this the entire season. This isn't Patrick Mahomes and company, who had Eric Fisher and Mitchell Schwartz, their left and right tackle respectively, go down over the course of the end of the season, and in one case go down in the postseason where they're adjusting on the fly. That's a difficult thing to do. These guys are planning for it. But then on the other side, you have got Patrick Mahomes in this offense, and that really is the swing state in all this for me. Joe Burrow's going to put up points. I don't think it's going to be nearly as much as last time, because we've seen Melvin Ingram, the outside linebacker for the Chiefs, who's been sensational since he came over from the Steelers earlier in the season, really heating it up in the postseason. I thought last weekend you saw him winning some battles, some that are going to show up more in the pass rush win rate side of things, beating blocks in under 2.5 than maybe in the sack column. Chris Jones, we know, is going to be in the mismatch in the middle. All these things that existed before. But now on the other side, with an offense in Patrick Mahomes that we are still marveling at, even though they had to adjust as much as they did this season, I think that's going to be the stress test that's different on this side, because we know the Bengals have been defined by a front four that we've seen banged up by injury late into this one. We've seen the Chiefs make the massive adjustment. You've got back some depth in your backfield once Clyde Edwards-Helaire came back. Jerick McKinnon and what he's done. We'll get you updated on the injury status of Darrell Williams and some other guys. But all in all, I look at this and I go back to the Super Bowl from last year and I say, all right, the things I know about football, fool me once. You can be the Bengals and get past a team led by Ryan Tannehill, whose offense looked so inept, given a team they were going up on the other side dominating on defense. You cannot fool me twice with the team in Patrick Mahomes that, even at their worst this year, found themselves hovering around the top five in most meaningful stats. So maybe I'm wrong. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Hit us up on the Canty and Golic Jr. hotline. Give us your most oddly specific predictions heading into conference championship weekend. We also want to remind you to tune into college basketball action tomorrow as Alabama hosts Baylor. Coverage begins at 3:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Coming up next, our show will become whole. Chris Canty going to join us here. And look at Sean Payton already settling in nicely to his role as both potential media member and potential usurper in the Dallas Cowboys coaching room. That's next here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, we are back in one piece here. What's going on, Chris?
Nothing much, man. You know I'm coming in hot, dude. I sat on the tarmac at JFK for over 3 hours while I was in a long line of other planes waiting to de-ice before I flew out to beat the nor'easter that's supposed to hit New York next. I guess it was supposed to be tomorrow, but seems like it's coming in a little bit early today.
Yeah, no, I saw that all getting started up there. Few things worse, because I always get frustrated with plane travel, Chris, and then I remember I'm about to be 30,000 feet in the air, and so I'm always like, you know what? Yeah, you know, if there's a technical issue or if you got to ice something up, go ahead and do it, because I want to stay in the sky. That's pretty easy for me.
Yeah, exactly. It's not really much you can do, though, once you've taken off from the terminal. You're pretty much at the mercy of the airline. Shout out to the folks that are actually doing those jobs, because we know that's not the easiest thing to do. But it still doesn't make it one of those things that you feel good about. You know, when you have plans and then they go off the rails because of something you can't control, that's the part about it that sucks.
Exactly. Well, we're glad you made it in one piece. Everyone out there, too, stay safe, man. These the snowfall totals they're talking about in the Northeast ain't something light. So pack it in and get ready for a weekend to watch football indoors. That is
hello.
That is also what's going to be the case for Sean Payton and Jerry Jones this weekend. They are not going to be in any of these games involved because both of their teams already got bounced. And, Chris, they're already starting to get intertwined. Like, the minute we think we're done with Cowboys headlines, we got the news yesterday that Mike McCarthy, their head coach, is going to remain their head coach. We had heard that from our ESPN NFL reporter, Ed Werder. This was the first time we heard from Jerry Jones today. He went on and did his hit with 105.3 The Fan, and the Cowboys owner talked about what it means, the pressure on Mike McCarthy, now that him and Dan Quinn are both back in the Cowboys building.
I don't look at it the opposite way. And let me assure you, Mike looks at it differently. Mike did everything that he could do to help us get and keep and extend Dan Quinn. He did everything he could do. He's not into worrying about that. He's the head coach. We worked in unison, worked great together. And we basically were just doing our jobs. Mike actually said correct, and it was just kind of maybe skipped over. And he basically said, Jerry and I talked job status. I'm fine. He said that. What you didn't hear was an announcement wasn't necessary.
So, Chris, you know Jerry Jones a lot better than I do. That doesn't sound like a ringing endorsement, but I'm happy to be proven wrong.
Yeah, that's not a ringing endorsement at all. I mean, Jerry Jones didn't do that interview right after the wild card loss for a reason. First of all, he was hot. He was probably in his feelings. But the other part about it is he was exploring what exactly could be done about trying to get the services of Sean Payton. If Sean Payton was thinking about stepping away from the Saints, you know that Jerry Jones was going to be one of the first ones on the phone to see if Sean Payton was interested in coaching in 2022. And if that were the case, we could see what could potentially happen on that front in terms of a deal being made between the two organizations. But listen, Jerry Jones can say whatever he wants to try to frame it as him having confidence in Mike McCarthy, but I think his silence spoke volumes, the fact that this is the first time we're hearing from him since that wild card loss on the job status of Mike McCarthy.
Yeah, 100%. Chris, I think this and hearing what we've heard from Jerry Jones, because we'll get to some more of his comments today, none of it did anything to put any doubt into the idea that Sean Payton could be in the mix for all this next year, that Mike McCarthy's job is truly safe. And I thought that was going to be important. What he said next was going to go a long way in the way that we were all allowed to treat this going into next season. And it feels like now we're going to be allowed to, every time the Dallas Cowboys start to falter, anytime there's an issue, start to wonder about Mike McCarthy and start to think about Sean Payton. Because this came from both sides, Chris. Sean Payton, the former Saints head coach, went on the Dan Patrick Show the other day and already got into full TV analyst mode in a way that's going to feed a ton of conspiracy theories. Here was Sean Payton when asked about what the Cowboys did wrong down the stretch against San Francisco.
So then ask me the end of the Cowboys game, and let me see if I can do this better.
Okay. What did the Cowboys do wrong in this situation?
Well, look, they're trying to get in field. They're trying to get in touchdown range, and they ran a draw. We typically would throw a pass and down. Ultimately, I think two more steps for Dak. He's got to slide a little quicker. He's up. Ball has to go to the umpire. Then let's go. We can never hand the ball to the center.
I mean, Chris, he's basically already publicly interviewing for the job.
Well, no doubt. And then he's laying out exactly what you're supposed to do and how you're supposed to coach your players in end-of-game situations like that. And it's clear the fact that the Cowboys didn't execute is an indictment on the head coach. There's no other way to look at it. So when we heard the sound bites from Mike McCarthy talking about defending that decision and saying that it was the right thing to do, Sean Payton just spelled it out for everybody. He just said, we're not going to run a draw play in that situation. We're going to throw a pass, and then we're going to go down, because it would ultimately end up being quicker. And then, oh, by the way, instead of handing the ball to the center, you give the ball to the umpire so he can spot it and so you can get the ball snapped and clock it. And the fact that that didn't happen, the fact that it didn't play out, and Mike McCarthy still tries to die on that hill, that's the part that's going to open the door ultimately for him to leave Dallas and for Sean Payton to step in as their next head coach if he wants that job.
Yeah, and that's the part we can't really fully handicap here, right? Kenny and Golick Jr. on ESPN Radio is, does Sean Payton actually want this? But, Chris, we heard enough from him in his 90 minutes of retirement press conference where he said, I could absolutely see myself coming back to football, you know, paraphrasing here a bit, but he never shut the door on any of that. That was clearly a guy who was a bit more exhausted by the situation, but still clearly has the itch to coach. And this has been an owner now in Jerry Jones who had a chance to come out and say, because it is easy here, it is, Mike McCarthy is going to be in our head coach. We have no interest in Sean Payton. We are happy with the staff and the job that they have done. He fell well short of that in a way that lets us know exactly what the real is here. So, Chris, how big an effect does that actually have on a team from the inside when everyone appears to see the situation on the outside the way we all do?
Well, it undermines the credibility of the head man, and you never want to be in a situation as an owner where you do that. But unfortunately, Jerry Jones has lived that movie before in a little bit of a different way. When I was with the Cowboys from 2005 to 2008, Bill Parcells was the coach my first 2 years through 2006, and then Jerry Jones went out and hired Jason Garrett as the offensive coordinator before he hired the head coach, who would eventually be Wade Phillips. It was the worst-kept secret throughout the organization that Jason Garrett was the head coach in waiting, and we had one good year right after Parcells. We went 13-3, number one seed in the NFC, but then that following season, everything fell apart, and we were a 500 club. And that's not because we didn't have the talent. It's because there were competing voices at the top of the organization. Players didn't know who to listen to. Are you going to listen to Jason Garrett, who we know is going to be around? Or are you going to listen to Wade Phillips, who Jerry Jones can't wait to fire when he gets an excuse or when he gets a reason? And I feel like that's the spot that Mike McCarthy is going into in 2022. One slip up, one mistake, one egregious error. If the season doesn't end the way that it's supposed to, then we know Mike McCarthy is absolutely gone. Make no mistake about this, Gojo. He is going into 2022 on one of the hottest seats in the National Football League.
It's scorching. And we keep mentioning the Sean Payton angle of this. Chris, I think it's a great point what you said there, because Jerry Jones being asked about Dan Quinn intimates that he is perceived as a threat here also, right? You've got a coordinator, again, on the side of the ball that became the face of the team down the stretch of the season. It was the Cowboys' defense that led that unit. Dan Quinn was out here getting more head coaching interviews. We can talk about his tenure with the Cowboys, but Chris, this is someone who's coming in, quickly endeared himself to everyone in that Dallas organization, and is certainly going to make things difficult on that front, even internally.
No doubt, and you got to think about this too, Gojo. Over the course of the next two or three seasons, the identity of this Cowboys team is going to shift. It's not going to be on the offensive side of the ball anymore. We know that that offensive line is going to have to be retooled sooner rather than later. Who knows what happens with Amari Cooper and that $20-plus million cap hit this offseason. Michael Gallup, an impending free agent, just tore his ACL at the end of the regular season. Ezekiel Elliott's contract, that's going to be movable after 2022. So you talk about all of these different pieces, the offensive side of the ball is not going to be the strength of the Dallas Cowboys moving forward. It's going to be on defense, because that's where your young stars are. That's where you have Micah Parsons. That's where you have Jayron Kearse. That's where you have Trayvon Diggs. Those guys are going to be the identity of the team, and who better to have as a potential in-house coaching, head coaching candidate than a guy that's responsible for being able to realize the potential that all of those guys had when Will McClay selected them. So, to me, this seems like one of those things where Mike McCarthy has got to watch his back, but he's also got to watch what's in front of him with his coordinators, because one of those guys could be on Jerry's short list as a replacement if things go left early in 2022.
This organization and this team, even this staff right now, are so used to being scrutinized from the outside, unlike very few teams and programs around the country. But even this seems like next season is going to be a step up in the way that we go about grading the Dallas Cowboys. Now that we know we got this Sean Payton specter waiting in the wings, as Jerry Jones has said, there's no added pressure on Mike McCarthy, but not with much conviction. Coming up next, speaking of pressure, last night there was no LeBron James out there for the Los Angeles Lakers. So how much can we really take away about what we saw from Anthony Davis and the rest of this team? We'll do that next here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Andy Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. Before we get to Chris Canty and his Los Angeles Lakers last night, showing something off even in a loss to the 76ers. Chris, I saw this tweet from Arash Markazi, who we've seen covering sports out in Los Angeles for quite some time, does a great job for one of our affiliates as well. He tweeted and said, ticket brokers are calling Sunday's Rams 49ers game the most expensive playoff game on record outside of the Super Bowl. Most expected that. What they didn't expect was parking passes to sell for the cost of a game ticket, with some selling for over $500. Chris, I don't know much, but I know this. St. Louis fans, I am sorry. This is exactly what the NFL expected when they got a team back in Los Angeles and got a stadium like this in Los Angeles.
No doubt. It's an event out there, man. And you see it every time the Rams have a home game. LeBron James is coming through. All the stars in Hollywood coming through. That's exactly what the NFL wants. You're already raising the profile of what happens to be the most popular sport in North America by being able to have a franchise that's capable of competing at a really high level in the Southern California market. So, yeah, this is a total win for the NFL. But then you also got the folks from Silicon Valley that are Niners fans that have that big bread that are coming in trying to make sure they can get in the building to cheer for their teams. And so this is going to be an exciting matchup, man. I'm interested to see what the crowd looks like, because that could go a long ways to determining who has a competitive edge when it comes to the overall environment.
Yeah, the 49ers fans bragged on packing that thing out the last time, and it seems like, according to Vivid Seats and some other outlets, that could be the case yet again on Sunday. So we'll keep some tabs on that. But, Chris, we got to do the checkup here. The Lakers went out last night and weren't able to get it done on the scoreboard. They ultimately lose to the 76ers by a pretty comfortable margin here. I believe it was 105-87 was the final score with the Sixers. We know there was no LeBron James out there, but Anthony Davis, 31 points out there, getting on the filling out the stat sheet again, better rebounding last night. Even though they didn't get the job done, Chris, was this a step forward in the way that you viewed Anthony Davis in his second game back?
Well, it was a step forward, but we're still talking about Anthony Davis in the first half having to leave the court and go in the back and get x-rays on his wrist because he fell down on it funny. So that's the thing with Anthony Davis. You're capable of seeing what you saw last night in the first half, where he drops 23 points and gives you six boards, but then you worry about, okay, how long are we going to have a guy that's capable of being a dominant force inside like that? That is the big question with AD. It's almost like you waited with bated breath, hoping that he can stay healthy, and then you're just waiting to see what happens with LeBron James. But I think the sidebar to the Lakers last night, the sidebar conversation, is Russell Westbrook, who continues to turn the ball over at an exorbitant rate. It's absolutely ridiculous. Six turnovers last night, and overall, the Lakers' turnovers, I think 19 turnovers led to 18 points for the 76ers. That's something that just can't happen. So this team has to figure out a way to be able to protect possessions, be more efficient in their half-court offense. And when LeBron James off the court, this Lakers team looks lost. You saw a dip when it came to the overall shooting. They were 40% from the floor, 20% from three. That's not going to get it done in the NBA. And that's why you're talking about the 76ers having a 20-point lead going into the fourth quarter last night.
Yeah, no, it certainly. And that's the hard part about this, Chris, is what we talked about before. It's so hard to truly judge this Lakers team when all three aren't on the court together. Because we know this Lakers team goes nowhere without LeBron James. And so seeing how any of the pieces fit together, it was great to see some of the aggression, the way Anthony Davis rolled towards the rack, got things done, and some of the touch shooting that went on in the mid-range for him. That's reminiscent of the good guy that we saw in the bubble, but it's still going to be really the thing that hangs over this team. Are we going to get these guys on the court for long enough together to really be able to measure this out before we get to the playoffs?
Well, the thing that is encouraging with AD is just the presence that he has on the defensive end, being able to protect the paint, being a shot blocker, because you're talking about, again, another game where he's got four blocks. So that seems like that's going to be a constant, and that's something that the Lakers are going to have to rely on. But they're also going to have to get more contributions from the supporting cast. Talen Horton Tucker in 17 minutes was minus 23. You can't have that. Like, he's got to find a way to be more productive. Malik Monk, a guy that was a knockdown shooter a couple of nights ago, goes 1-for-6 from downtown. That can't happen. He's got to be more efficient. We talked about all of the different guys that have to step up and be more consistent in order for this Lakers team to be close to what the front office thought they had in mind for them, but it just doesn't seem like they can put that together for any stretch of time.
Nope, it really is going to ultimately come down to that same question we asked before when they put this roster together. You're going to be able to buy threes when it comes time to actually collect. We'll get to plenty more on that, but coming up next, let's head back to the NFL and that NFC Championship game we talked about. Matthew Stafford walking into maybe the most pressure he's faced yet.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.